business.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
I don't know about that, Denny Green. I don't know if the fans, the super fans, are who we thought they were. I know one super fan is. His name is Tim Jester. He represents the Atlanta Falcons. I am Pod Vader. This is Next Fan Up. And that's all we've got today, Tim. Me and you.
I think we'll be okay. I think we'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty easy topic to talk about, and that is scandal. The Cleveland Browns, Atlanta Falcons, they got punishments for their quote-unquote crimes this week, and we're going to be delving into that. We're also going to talk about what's going on with the Patriots, and how about the Jets? Those two teams also have some unspeakable crimes against the game of football that need some addressing. If you'd like to get involved in any of the conversations that we have, perhaps you're a Giants fan. No, not Giants. We have a Giants super fan. Perhaps you're a Bills fan. Perhaps you're an Arizona Cardinals fan. You could join us. We're taking applications now. NextFanUp@gmail.com. That's our email address. That's how you can apply for those two positions. But we also want to hear from you. We're by the fan, for the fan. We want you to get involved in these conversations. Send us your emails. NextFanUp@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at NFU Podcast, or on Facebook, search Next Fan Up, or you can go right to Facebook.com/NFU Podcast. You can follow Tim on Twitter at Tim Is Hiding. That's a lot of contact information, Tim. I think it's time to start getting into the meat and the bones of today's show. What do you think?
Let's do it.
All right. Since you're here with me, I should say our Brown superfan, Rob, had told us ahead of time that he wasn't going to be able to join us this week. So he sent us a nice email about what's going on in Cleveland. But since you are actually here, Tim, let's start with what's going on in Atlanta. On Monday, the league announced a $350,000 fine and the loss of a fifth-round draft pick. Not this year, though. Not until 2016. That punishment is for the Falcons piping in crowd noise during their home games for the past two seasons. Now, it's being blamed on their former director of marketing, Roddy White, not the wide receiver, mind you. And it's also been stated that he was fired due to this incident. The punishment for the particular person involved, even though no one else was cited as having any knowledge of this going on, was the team president, Rich McKay. He was suspended from his role as chairman of the league's competition committee. We're going to get into all of this. And he's suspended from Wednesday until at least the end of June. So, Tim, as a fan of the Atlanta Falcons, are you feeling shame today?
Absolutely not. Let's keep piping in crowd noise. If all they're going to do is take away the amount of money that Arthur Blank makes and the time that it takes him to sneeze and a fifth round selection that we weren't going to do anything with anyways, then we might as well just make it louder. Because honestly, I mean, this is less than a slap on the wrist. It's like someone just like looked at us, thought about pushing us, and then decided against it. Like, we could not have gotten off easier.
I mean, the idea behind punishments is to prevent people from committing the same crime again. And as you just said, this doesn't appear to prevent anything. $350,000 to an NFL owner is less than a drop in a bucket. He's probably carrying that in his back pocket.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, as soon as they announced that this is what they were, you know, using as the punishment, you know, my girlfriend and I, season ticket holders, we went out and bought megaphones. So, because there's really no point not carrying it into the stadium. You know, I mean, when I saw that it was a fifth round selection, what I did was I went and pulled up a list of the fifth round selections since 2000, and I'm just gonna bring out a couple of these names. Just tell me if you've heard of any of these people doing anything meaningful for the Falcons at all. So I'll start with last year, and I'll run down about five of them. the Ricardo Allen corner, Stanley Mapanga defensive end, Brady Ewing fullback, Jacquizz Rodgers running back, Kerry Meyer wide receiver. Just off the past 5 years, we have one of those people still on the team in Stanley Mapanga, and he's like our fifth defensive end, and that was when we still had OC on the team. So, you know, it's not like we're doing anything with these picks anyways. So let's just throw them away. They can have 5, 6, and 7 if we can up the volume to 11.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously those names, I think the one that most people might have some sort of recognition about is Jacquizz Rodgers. And that is probably because of his fantasy impact when he had very slight fantasy impact. And as you mentioned, no longer on the team. I just noticed he signed. Did he sign in Minnesota? I don't remember where Jack was.
Chicago Bears. Was.
There we go.
And I think he'll be good there.
And he's going to be their second, probably at best. He's more
probably
of a pass
third.
Catcher. Yeah, he's more of a pass catching type guy. He's undersized. He's certainly not an every down back. So even using that information, that the Falcons haven't had a lot of success with their fifth rounders, the pick isn't for this year's draft. It's for next year's draft. So you have a whole year, an entire season, to replace the pick that you lose in the first place.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is they didn't want to punish Dan Quinn for something that he wasn't even remotely responsible for in coming into the Falcons. They're like, oh, no, he's from Seattle. We like Seattle. So let's be nice to Dan Quinn for a year. And I mean, you know, either way, it doesn't really matter. We're still not going to do anything with the fifth round pick, even if Quinn is in charge of making the selection. So you'll see how it goes. And, you know, as far as Rich McKay, you know, not being able to be on the competition committee until June. Okay, so what, we gave him like an extended spring break? Like, all right, you can go sit around the house and do nothing, and all the other owners or GMs will take care of the rest of this. So, I mean, It's ridiculous that they called it a punishment at all.
And frankly, the competition committee's job for this season is pretty much done. It's not like they're making any rules between now and the end of June that are going to affect this season anyway. So exactly that. That it was even less than a slap on the wrist. Let's talk about Rich McKay in terms of being on the competition committee. So how do you feel that the chairman of the competition committee is the guy on the team that broke the rules? I mean, to me, I think that's what's more egregious here, is that you have a guy who's in charge of making the rules for the league breaking the rules.
I mean, as far as that, isn't that the way that it always goes? Like, whenever you watch any good movie, it's always the crooked cop that does this, you know, or like politicians that are doing that. It's the people who find out what they can get away with and they do it. You know, that's just the way that the world has always worked. So I'm not surprised to see that it's the chairman of the competition committee. I'm kind of proud of him for, you know, finally stepping into that role and not being the only, you know, evil person, you know, in Atlanta besides Arthur Blank, who he may not be evil, but he definitely does look like an evil cartoon character.
See, to me, if you're going to hand down a punishment like this, and it's the guy in charge of the of making the rules, it has to be a much stronger punishment. And not that this exonerates the Falcons. I mean, this is the argument that fans like myself have not necessarily used to defend our actions in the past, but sort of pointing out that everybody in the league does this. The Falcons are not the only team in the league piping in crowd noise. And this is something that I can tell you from my time at ESPN, that literally every player, every front office guy has come in and admitted off the air that every team pipes in extra crowd noise. It's just simply a fact of life in the NFL. That this is what they do. So I don't even quite understand why the Falcons have been targeted for this. You look at their home record over the past two seasons, it's not as great as it once was. I mean, it was known for a period of time where you would go to the Georgia Dome and you weren't coming away with a victory. But the last two seasons, they're 5-6 at home.
Yeah, I mean – been really bad. And, you know, even worse for that, like with us pumping in, you know, piping in crowd noise, our own offense had to go to a silent count on multiple occasions this year. Like when the Bears were in town, the entire stadium was blue and orange. It was embarrassing. And it was louder when our team was on offense than it was when they were on offense. And, you know, maybe it's because we were just like, oh, look, they have Jay Cutler. It doesn't matter if we get loud. He's going to mess it up anyways, but didn't happen. They ended up crushing us. You know, and then the same thing when the Browns came in. The Browns fans were so loud and obnoxious. And if I hear, you know, one more dog barking, then I'm going to lose it. But, yeah, I mean, that's just how it goes. I don't know what exactly happened, you know, with the major collapse and, you know, in playing at the Georgia Dome. But, man, it's been brutal over the past 2 years. And those are the 2 years that I have been a season ticket holder. So a lot of fun to just throw that money away.
So let's go to the Cleveland Browns now, as they were also punished this week for their misdeeds. And that was general manager Ray Farmer, who was sending texts to the sideline. And reportedly, the manner of these texts were discussing the quality of the former offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan's play calling and not calling for specific plays to be run. I get there's a rule. You cannot text down to the sideline. But is there really any sort of advantage to having the general manager say, hey, you're sucking out there? What are you doing? I don't get it. I don't get what the crime is here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the same page. Because it's not like Kyle Shanahan was sitting there like, oh, yeah, maybe that's a good idea. Maybe I should do that and, you know, give up on everything that, you know, I know about football, which is probably more than the general manager knows. He's probably, you know, good at bringing in awful players because we are talking about the Browns, you know, and signing them to awful contracts that'll ruin their cap space for years to come. But, I don't get it. I haven't had an opportunity, to really dive in too deep with that. But, I mean, there's obviously a reason why Kyle Shanahan left in the middle of his contract with the Browns. And, you know, we're happy to have him down here in Atlanta. You know, it should be a good change of pace. It's absolutely ridiculous, that this even comes up. Like, we're worried about a 65-year-old man texting a 45-year-old man to talk, you know, about football. Like, come on, like, this is, it's silly.
So, Kohler is our Brown super fan. He sent us this email to talk about the situation and says, this scandal by the Browns is more like a reminder to us all how a franchise can go. A brand new GM texting down to the sidelines to tell them what plays to run. You got to be kidding me right now. Wait, it gets better. In those games, the Browns had some embarrassing offensive numbers to go along with their 23rd ranked defense. So that means that either the offensive coordinator, Boy Shanahan, got so frustrated that someone was texting him that it somehow affected his in-game coaching, or they actually listened to a GM and ran his plays. Either of those options is one giant reminder that no one knows what the is going on at Browns headquarters. You got to love the perspective of the fan, that's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like that's just years and years of frustration coming out right there on one incident. But he's absolutely right. I mean, I guess there is a reason that if the offense is that bad, that somebody up front is going to want to make some changes. But I don't think this is the way to go about it.
He adds, but as to what it means for the NFL, the Browns got off cheap. I don't think that breaking this law could give anyone an advantage, but I figured after this year of bad judgments, the commissioner would just throw the book at anything that came down the pike. Turns out he is still a spineless person for the owners, and we better get used to it because he doesn't seem to care one bit. Now, I don't think the commissioner technically had anything to do with these punishments, and I could be wrong on that. I haven't honestly done enough research into this. I haven't dove that deep into exactly how these punishments came to be. But, I mean, again, this points to, okay, there was a rule, it was broken, and now there's a punishment, but does the punishment do enough to stop the crime from happening again? Ultimately, the punishment was a suspension for Ray Farmer, but it's during a time when it's really not going to affect the team, and a fine. And again, it's a fine for an NFL, for a person involved in the NFL, that's really not going to affect them that much. $250,000 is the fine for the Browns.
It's nothing. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's less than it costs to send Manziel to rehab. So, you know, it's not even, you know, that big of a deal. I mean, I know we just keep saying the same thing over and over, but, you know, if the NFL wants, you know, the fans to, you know, take these, you know, quote unquote crimes seriously, then, you know, they've really got to come down on them.
So that leads us to perhaps some more serious crimes. And two crimes that were not handed out punishments for. One has been extremely popular because of the break between the AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, and that's Deflategate, which there still has been no ruling on. And the Patriots involved in another issue, accusing the Jets of tampering when it comes to Darrell Revis. Now, according to the letter of the law, what Woody Johnson did in terms of commenting on a player on another team in the month of December, and that player was specifically Darrell Revis, and his comments were specifically, "I would love to have Darrell Revis on the New York Jets," is breaking the rule. But is that technically tampering?
I don't think so. I mean, it's absurd, because I feel like every single GM in football could have said, "I would love to have Darrell Revis on our team." I mean, I don't know what the question was that posed the comment, but, you know, everybody tampers. Everybody talks about other players. Everybody wants great players on their team. That's not any surprise. So, you know, whenever everybody's all butthurt about tampering, you know, it's not because, you know, that, you know, it's not like Darrell Revis was sitting there. He was like, "Oh, I didn't realize the Jets wanted me back." No, he knew. He knew as soon as he left that the Jets wanted him back. Like, there's no question in that. Yeah, and it's the same, you know, like, you know, I'm sitting here like, man, I'd really love for Marshawn Lynch to be my running back. And, you know, I'd love to have Calvin Johnson. But, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, Arthur Blank's sitting there saying the same thing, you know, and it's sorry that he had a hot mic on him. You know, maybe he should have, you know, waited a couple months and, you know, watched the Wisconsin men's basketball team press conferences and know not to say things in front of a microphone. But, yeah, I mean, that's just how it goes. Everybody's going to talk about other players that, you know, they don't have and that they want. And, you know, it's no surprise to me.
And then, of course, Belichick was asked about Darrell Revis at the coaches' meetings, the owners' meetings, just a couple weeks ago, and commented on Darrell Revis. And, you know, one could argue that he also has technically now broken the same rule that the Patriots have sort of put the red flag up on the Jets. Ultimately, I think the rule needs to have some sort of clarification to it. And I think that's what the punishment that will come down will ultimately reflect. That said, I know that there were other times where tampering was cried out about and that other teams were punished for that tampering charge. So it comes down to a point where you really need to make these rules as specific as you possibly can so that the teams know exactly what they can and cannot do. And if you're going to make the punishments different over periods of time, even though they are punishments for the exact same crime, well, now you've put confusion out there to all the other teams, and nobody knows, you know, whether it's a severe penalty or not.
Yeah, no, I would absolutely agree. And, you know, with Belichick saying it, all right, so I guess the penalty is that, you know, they're just going to offset, you know, no loss of down, anything like that. Let's replay it. And, yeah, I mean, it's stupid. And, you know, in my opinion, you know, when I look at this and they're like, oh, you know, we need to make a bigger penalty for tampering, that sort of thing, it just makes me think that more players are going to test free agency and not re-sign with the teams that they're currently with, you know, just because they're like, oh, well, I don't know what kind of interest is out there for me. Let's find out. And then players are going to get more expensive. And then, you know, we're just going to have more and more issues with, you know, who actually stays on teams longer and, you know, what teams are actually good. And, you know, football is going to turn into baseball because everybody's going to want to go, you know, to these, you know, big market teams. And yeah, I could be completely off base in that. I probably am, because I thought about that idea about 35 seconds ago as you were talking. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's one of those things where I don't even think that this is much of an issue. They're, you know, making a mountain out of a molehill, and it's just they want something to talk about other than the draft. So, you know, this is what they've come up with.
You know, I do think a lot of this becomes sort of media hyped. I mean, we all know that the NFL is the moneymaker in sports in today's world. It is the one thing that Americans cannot live without for any period of time. And the NFL has conscientiously made an effort to put something of importance in every month of the year so that people are talking about football during the off season. The problem that I think the NFL didn't realize by doing this is it makes situations like this a bigger priority in the scope of things when it comes to the media, because the media is looking for something that's going to drive ratings. And they know that if it says NFL, it's going to get clicks online, and it's going to get eyeballs on televisions, and it's going to get earbuds on radios and podcasts. So this is something that I think the NFL needs to really consider moving forward, is sort of how do they keep these sort of things? Because ultimately it's a negative blemish on the shield, no matter what. Now, how do you minimize the effect of that blemish? I think that's what the NFL has really got to consider moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's get to the Patriots side of things and Deflategate. And everyone's asking, when is Deflategate going to be over? When is the report from Ted Wells going to come out? What is the punishment? What is the right punishment for this game, for this crime? And I found this article from Judy Batista on NFL.com, and I hadn't seen any of this before, but it makes a lot of sense now. In terms of why the NFL is having issues with Deflategate. Because, and I'm just going to read her paragraph word for word here. The purposeful underinflation of footballs, if it happened, will likely be difficult to prove by outside investigator Ted Wells, but the NFL must still decide who is responsible for the footballs being at the proper pressure, who is to blame for improper footballs being used. I mean, that's so much in that sentence being said. You need to figure out if underinflation of footballs actually causes any sort of competitive advantage. And I can tell you, it doesn't cause a 44-10 or whatever the final score of that game was advantage. If it actually happened, there's still the possibility that these balls weren't as underinflated as originally reported, at least not all of the balls, is going to be difficult to prove if the Patriots actually did the crime, because unless you have a smoking gun, some sort of video of a person underinflating balls, you can't actually say the Patriots did it. And then who is ultimately responsible for the proper pressure in the footballs? Is it the team or is it the NFL? And it, by NFL, is it the officials? I mean, this whole thing was blown completely out of proportion by the media during a time period where there was nothing else to talk about in the NFL. And so this is sort of what I'm talking about with all of these punishments that were handed out and the blemish to the shield. Little things like this, which are ultimately not as big a deal as they seem, become bigger because of the media latching on and hyping it up.
Yeah, and you know, we spoke briefly, you know, about this before, you know, we got started today. And you know, the idea that I've come up with is that this is the officials' fault. They touch the football every single time before a play because they have to set it at the line of scrimmage. You know, anytime I've ever touched a ball that's been underinflated to a point where I've been able to notice, you know, it's been a, oh, let's grab a different ball. You know, like this one is obviously underinflated. And the air capacity of a football means nothing, you know, when you're trying to tackle somebody. So, you know, I saw where, you know, the Ravens had posted on Twitter that, you know, there was going to be something about it and, you know, they were all upset. But realistically, I mean, you know, you could have a flat ball, and if you can't tackle the guy, it doesn't matter. But, you know, I do think that it falls on the officials. And, you know, I don't think they're ever going to be able to find any information that says that they specifically did it, because, you know, the Patriots didn't have cameras on their own, you know, locker rooms and ball boys, because they had, you know, all of the New England Patriots cameras were over, you know, watching the Ravens get ready. So, you know, I mean, it's a stupid scandal. And the only reason that it came up is because Marshawn Lynch wouldn't give a 5-minute interview and the media just had to fill more time.
Yeah. Listen, the Patriots are found responsible. They're found responsible. Underinflated balls did not give them a competitive advantage. I've been practicing all week with my son throwing a football around, and honestly, he has a harder time throwing the flat ball. I had to pump it up and make it, you know, a little bit harder for him so that he could actually get a good grip on the ball and spin it. And, by the way, Zach is doing fantastic in spinning the football. I cannot wait for football season to watch him throwing sideline routes against kids that are 3 years older than him. It's going to be fantastic. But that's a story for another day.
Quick question. Did you deflate a ball for your 11-year-old son just to see if he could throw it?
Yep,
I did. Did you do that on purpose?
I did. I did it on purpose. You can find me.
I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you.
Please find me. You know, by the way, enjoyed all of the jokes about the Patriot Mobile's tires being underinflated. As that's also a sad era now gone by. The Patriots Mobile was donated to an organization known as Wheels for Wishes. The proceeds of the sale of the car will go towards Make-A-Wish Foundation. So the Patriots Mobile is no longer in my possession. It's a bittersweet day.
Probably for the best.
That said, in negotiations currently with the wife to make a new car, a new Patriots Mobile, but I am currently losing those negotiations.
If you win, you need to write a handbook on how to do that, and you'll sell a million copies.
Yes, I don't think I'm going to win.
How to Get What You Want When Arguing with Your Wife by Pod Vader.
It's quite a shame. Tim, how's the offseason going so far for the Falcons? I said on episode one of Next Fan Up that if there was a team that has had the most underrated offseason that hasn't gotten a lot of press for how much they've actually improved, it is the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, you know, we've been able to bring in a lot of pieces, which is something that we've needed. You know, over the past couple of years, the biggest issue that we've had as a team is having people on the field, you know, due to injury, and, you know, the people that we do have on the field, you know, actually being good. So we've been able to bring in some really, you know, nice key pieces, especially on defense, of some people who've had some, you know, had some injury history, but when they're on the field, they've been fantastic. So that's going to be really nice to see, you know, Dan Quinn hopefully turn this defense around and, you know, come up with some sort of rotation to where, you know, we'll actually be able to get after the quarterback. And we have brought in some people who've had sacks, which is nice. You know, on the offensive side of the ball, seeing Harry Douglas go, kind of bittersweet, but I'm still, you know, angry at him for dropping the ball in 2012, where we would have won the Super Bowl against the Ravens because they're garbage. But again, you know, not exactly Harry Douglas's fault. I'm going to blame that one on Matt Ryan because, you know, the greatest tight end in NFL history, Tony Gonzalez, is wide open in the end zone on that same exact play. So, you know, you got to pick and choose your battles, but, you know, happy with bringing in Leonard Hankerson. Yes, he's coming off the ACL, but, you know, there was some time, you know, in Washington where he made Robert Griffin look pretty good. And, you know, when you have Julio on one side of the field, you know, you're not looking for a whole lot from the other guys because Julio is going to draw the double team. So if they can just find the soft spots in the zone to get open and get 9-10 yards at a time, you know, we can make that happen. But, you know, overall, I'm pleased as a Falcons fan, you know, with what we're able to bring in. You know, we're looking at the draft and, you know, you see a lot of these mock drafts and, you know, there was one, you know, that came out yesterday by D. Orlando Ledbetter of the AJC and he mocked Todd Gurley to us. So our own Atlanta sports writer just completely off the mark, you know, bringing in a running back that we don't need. So, you know, it'll be interesting. I'm really hoping, you know, for a pass rusher, you know, as we're, you know, as when we get to our mock draft conversation, Yeah, I was able to get Vic Beasley at 8. Very pleased with that. So if he's able to drop to 8, we better run with the card up to the podium for him, and I'll order my jersey that day. But yeah, the biggest things, just getting somebody who can get at the quarterback is the biggest thing that we need.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at what you've done so far in free agency, you have a lot of these guys, sort of underrated pass rushers that don't get a lot of press, but do add a lot to your pass rush. Adrian Claiborne from the Buccaneers, I think, is a guy that's definitely going to improve in the pass rush situation for you. O'Brien Schofield from the Seahawks, somebody that Dan Quinn obviously has some personal knowledge about, was sort of like the third or fourth guy in the rotation in Seattle. So I think that's another improvement for your pass rush. And while he tends to have a little bit of an injury history, linebacker Brooks Reed from the Houston Texans comes to the Atlanta Falcons. So I think you guys have done quite a good job in terms of getting some under-the-radar pass rushers that are going to help you guys right off the bat. And obviously, if you can add another pass rusher in the first round of this year's NFL draft, you guys are going to be looking really good. And in that division, you don't need that much to look really good.
Yeah, no, when it comes down to the final game of the season and it's Atlanta against Carolina and the winner takes all and the winner will have a losing record going into the playoffs, yeah, we don't have to do all that much. Realistically, I see the winner of the NFC South being 9-7 this year, and it's embarrassing. But if you think about it, that's where the Seahawks were a few years ago, and they've been in back-to-back Super Bowls and should have 2 consecutive Super Bowl wins, but they decided to get cute. So, it's one of those things where, you know, we're not necessarily in a rebuilding mode. You know, everybody keeps asking that question, are the Falcons rebuilding? You know, is it time to, you know, give up on this project? I don't think so. You know, if we had, you know, a replacement level tight end and a pass rush that can actually get at least 1 sack per game, then, you know, we're back in the playoffs. And, you know, once we get into the playoffs, we can make something happen. You know, we have the pieces there. So, you know, I'm not too terribly concerned. I'm pretty happy as a fan, you know, with what we've been able to do. And, you know, I find that it's better than last year's free agency where we brought in Paul Soliai and Tyson Jackson, and everybody was like, oh, look at these big names. And I'm also like, yeah, but they're not very good. So, you know, this time, you know, we're able to bring in some pieces. They're a little bit less expensive. They're not the big splash, but the teams that make big splashes in free agency don't make big splashes in the postseason.
And when you talk about a replacement tight end, you've signed Tony Moiaki, who, granted, is a couple of seasons removed from having that big breakout year in Kansas City, and Jacob Tammy, who I definitely think is replacement level tight end for you. I think you've got a couple of underrated guys in that sort of role for you. I think you guys are set up real nice. You obviously still have Matty Ice. You've mentioned, you know, losing Harry Douglas, but replacing him with Leonard Hakerson, I would say that's an even split right there. I like the Atlanta Falcons. What can I say?
Hey, it might be the kiss of death for you. Plenty of room on this bandwagon, you know, if you're tired of cheering for your Super Bowl champs. So, it's been a fun off season. You know, we'll see what happens. We are getting a little bit older at certain key positions, but, you know, by bringing in these players, you know, and a lot of the players we brought in are still 25, 26 years old. It's fantastic that we're being able to bring in people, you know, that are going into their prime years, you know, as far as, you know, football knowledge and, you know, peak of their physical ability. And, you know, we'll see what happens. And, you know, I'm excited about the season.
So let's see what Rob Kohler here has to say about the Browns offseason so far. He says they didn't try and do too much. They got some solid players with low risk. They built some depth along the defense. Tre'Mon Williams solidifies the best unit on the Browns. It means they don't think Justin Gilbert is good enough at this time, but at least they realized it early, unlike some of their other draft busts. I know that everyone thinks that the Josh McCown signing is strange, but the contract doesn't hamstring them. He's seen some success when he's able to stay on his feet. The Browns' offensive line is not elite, but it is pretty good. They were in the top 10 in sacks given up, and that was with Johnny Manziel as quarterback for 5 games. I don't think he is Chicago Bears McCown, but he won't be Tampa Bay McCown either. in the draft, I'm hoping that they realize what they need to compete in the AFC North and draft defense with their first three picks. The rushing defense was last in the league last year, and they need help with the middle of their defense. They also need a pass rusher. Kruger is good, but he is better as your secondary rusher. He doesn't beat double teams very well, and as the number one rusher, he is easily taken out of his game. I'd love for them to take a chance on a quarterback in the third or fourth round. Those are picks that you can take a bit of a gamble, but this is the Browns we are talking about, and they will make the most asinine moves that you can't even think of right now. My bet is that they waste their 12th pick on a wide receiver when the class is fairly deep and you can get value later. Now, I agree wholeheartedly with the last couple of sentences there. I must admit, I'm not the biggest Browns fan, so I don't know a lot of the ins and outs of the Browns roster construction. But I do think McCown is a decent enough signing to help get them through. But at the same time, if you're going to sign McCown, why didn't you re-sign Brian Hoyer? I mean, did they let Hoyer go before Manziel ended up in rehab? I don't remember.
I think that's the timeline, yeah, that they had let Hoyer go. And, you know, it may not even be, you know, letting Hoyer go. Hoyer may not have wanted to come back. You know, that's something that you've also got to keep in mind. I mean, you've got, you know, the scandal going on that we touched on earlier. He lost his offensive coordinator. He's able to go to Houston, you know, where he's familiar with Bill O'Brien, you know, and has a better team around him already. You know, Houston, realistically, all they need is a quarterback, and they're fantastic. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But you know, if I'm Brian Hoyer, there's no way that I would want to go back, you know, to Cleveland. You know, I'd be taking my talents to anywhere else.
that's a fair point. I think the Browns, I mean, yeah, it would be stupid for them to waste their 12th selection on a wide receiver when the class is really deep. They can probably get someone of good quality in the second round for sure, and maybe even the third round at wide receiver. But at the same time, I mean, that is a position of need for that team.
Yeah, no, if I'm a Browns fan, you know, I'm not upset if they end up with one of the top two receivers in the draft at the 12th pick, because you know, both of them are game changers. You don't know if you're ever going to have Josh Gordon. And, you know, who do you have below that? You know, you have, what, Andrew Hawkins, and I can't remember who the rookie was last year. And they're okay. But, you know, none of them are, you know, the Julio Jones, Dez Bryant, Josh Gordon type of receiver. And, you know, while those are, you know, the teams that have, you know, Julio, Dez, and Josh Gordon haven't been, you know, in the Super Bowl, thing to be said about having that type of receiver, especially in the AFC North, where you're not going to be able to run the ball against those defenses. You know, you're going to have to, you know, exploit the fact that the Steelers don't have a good corner anymore. The Ravens don't have a good corner anymore. You know, the Bengals, I'm not too familiar with what they have there, but you know, I feel like if you have one of those explosive style receivers, that could open something up on the edge, you know, for at least six of your 16 games. And if you can win against your division, unless you're the Atlanta Falcons, then you'll make the playoffs.
These are your wide receivers, Cleveland. Right now, your starting wide receivers would be the two free agents you picked up in Brian Hartline and Dwayne Bowe. You have Andrew Hawkins coming out of the slot, and you have Travis Benjamin backing those guys up, and somebody else I don't believe is going to be a big impact for your team. Where you're really missing someone is you no longer have that big tight end. You're starting Gary Barnage. I think you need to think about a tight end. Exactly. You need to think about a tight end, Cleveland. That's where you're really hurting. And I do think you need someone better than Josh McCown at quarterback. Listen, Cleveland, you suffered for a long time. I fear you're going to be suffering a little bit longer, especially this season. But, you know, this is what's been always interesting to me with Cleveland is they're really not that far off. They really aren't. I mean, you can argue that, you know, the value of a tight end, if you have three decent wide receivers and Brian Hartline, Dwayne Bowe, Andrew Hawkins, that's a decent three-man core there. you know, you may argue that you want somebody even more explosive than Brian Hartline as your number one. You know, you can certainly draft that in this year's draft. To me, as I now look at this, I don't think wide receiver is much a position of need as much as their quarterback position is one that they really need to think about addressing.
But is it the right decision to trade up for another quarterback?
Well, I mean, they were stupid and did that, obviously, with Johnny Manziel. That was a mistake. I don't think you can make a mistake, you know, with Marcus Mariota. And that sort of leads us back to the conversation I had last week with the super fans. If you'd like to hear that conversation about Jameis Winston versus Marcus Mariota, feel free to go back and download it. We are on iTunes and we're also on blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. I don't know. Cleveland certainly has a few questions to address. I'm not going to talk about the Patriots. I've been talking about them for the past few weeks. They've done really nothing in free agency that makes me go, woo. But at the same time, they just won a Super Bowl. So beggars can't be choosers.
That's true. That's true. I'm bitter about a Super Bowl. I want one.
Yeah, I can imagine you do. I mean, you don't have one, do you?
No, we've been to one in our history, and we started in 1966. And in the one that we were in, we lost pretty bad. So, yeah.
Well, Tim, do you have anything else you'd like to add on today's show?
I think we're good. You know, I think we did a great job talking about the Browns, even though none of us have any idea what's going on. So Rob did a great job sending us that email. And yeah, I feel like we've covered what we wanted to cover.
Yes. I'd like to say that, super fans, you're all on blast from Pod Vader as you left me and Tim here alone this Saturday morning, which I will say this, Tim, as I'm looking out my window, there's no snow falling. There's only one little pile of snow across the street in my neighbor's yard, and that's because that's where he decided to pile up the snow off of his driveway. But otherwise, I can see the yard. I don't see any sign of snow. The temperature today is supposed to be near somewhere in the 50s, I believe. So, I mean, I'm actually kind of happy today. In terms of weather,
yesterday was 82 and sunny, and today we're looking at about 76 and partly cloudy.
And on that note, you can send us your emails on your weather reports, nextfanup@gmail.com, Twitter @NFU Podcast. You can follow Tim on Twitter @TimIsHiding. You can follow me on Twitter @TheRealPodVader. You can join us on Facebook to see your team's previews. Each superfan has written up their previews for their teams, and you can read those on our Facebook page. Just check out NextFanUp. Either through the search function or go to facebook.com/NFU podcast. Another show, we are by the fans for the fans, Tim, but another show that's going to be debuting on Blog Talk Radio later this week is footballbyfootball.com. And it is exactly what you think it is. It is former football professionals talking about the game of football from their perspective. They are led by Matt Chatham, the former special teams ace for the New England Patriots and New York Jets. Trust me, I have no idea how that show ended up on Blog Talk Radio. I may have something to do with it, but I invite you all, if you are loving football and you love it by the fan for the fan, you're going to love it even more when it's by the football man for the football fan. So I invite you to check out Football by Football with those guys.
And just as a follow-up reminder, we are still looking for a Cardinals and a Bills super fan. So if you're a Cardinals or a Bills fan, email us at nextfanup@gmail.com, and we can try to get you in rotation on the podcast.
Yeah, I don't think fans for those two teams exist. I think the Bills. I think the Bills Mafia is a rumor. It doesn't, it's a ghost. It's not real. It's just a Twitter robot that goes around and trolls people.
Okay, then let's go to Arizona. We'll find a cactus, put a hat on him, and see if he's good at podcasting. Because he's got to be as good as our other co-host from today.
Yes, other co-host.
You're on
from
blast,
today.
Patrick. You're on blast.
We are throwing lots and lots of shade. With all of that shade, I think it's safe for me to say, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that you know, this game is four quarters long.
Tim, we did it. We made it.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
I can tell you that replied back, traveling now later this afternoon, and texted back, just saw this. Sorry, but on my way to baseball practice.
Fair enough.
So
we should live podcast his baseball practice next weekend. Are we keeping this in at the end of the podcast?
That'd be pretty funny, wouldn't it?
Don't edit it out.
Hold on, I forgot.
Is anybody still listening? If so, tweet me at Tim is hiding.
I forgot
Speaking
to add
scandal,
the...
Kerry Washington, definitely in my top five. So she can call me whenever. The girlfriend will have to understand.